Good morning. Please be seated. Okay, State versus Kolonoski. First matter.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Mary Swift here on behalf of Mr. Kolonoski. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Mr. Kolonoski was denied effective assistance of counsel because his attorney failed to secure the admission of critical impeachment evidence and failed to object to inadmissible DNA evidence.
With respect to that first claim, the authentication claim, let's call it that, what does the record show us about efforts to obtain whatever was necessary from Facebook? I know there was a lot of talk about what would be required, and I'd like your thoughts on what the record shows to support the first prong of the ineffective assistance claim.
Sure. So it started several months before trial. Defense counsel basically filled out a sample subpoena, which he turned over to the prosecutor at the time, who ended up not prosecuting the case at trial, to turn over to the detective, because apparently with Facebook, it requires a subpoena submitted by law enforcement to obtain records of user accounts. And so defense counsel sort of perceived that that was the way that he was going to need to lay the foundation for this Facebook post. And so that happened several months before trial. The detective admitted at trial that he never actually served that subpoena on Facebook. And so you also had defense counsel on the record saying that he was following up with the trial prosecutor every couple weeks asking about that subpoena. And so we have a lot of efforts being taken by defense counsel to obtain the records from Facebook. And then you get to the time of trial, and the trial court realizes that this, basically the state hasn't been helping defense counsel obtain those records, and I think at that point sort of lowers the bar much lower for admission of this evidence.
And says, how so?
Basically says anybody with familiarity with Facebook and how posting works can testify to this, and says maybe one of the detectives can testify to this, maybe your defense investigator can testify to this. And in fact, the last we hear of it, defense counsel says, I'm going to talk to my defense investigator and see if she has, you know, the requisite knowledge to testify to general posting on Facebook. And so there were a lot of efforts taken, but for some reason, no sort of final effort to secure a pretty straightforward witness to testify basically what the timestamp means.
So that is the objectively unreasonable action or inaction on which you rely.
That's right.
Okay. Now, the trial court put on the record that, in his view, the authentication was not, or lack of authentication was not prejudicial.
That's right.
Because the issue here is identity based on the alibi by Kolonoski. Why isn't that sufficient to deal with the prejudice prong?
Well, this court engages in de novo review of both deficiency and prejudice. So the trial court's finding as to prejudice, it's not controlling for this court. But furthermore, you're right that it's an identity alibi defense, but we have the complaining witness with several inconsistencies in her testimony. She didn't know Mr. Kolonoski. She couldn't pick him out of a photo montage. She couldn't definitively identify him in court. She said couldn't remember the suspect's hair color. She said the suspect didn't have any tattoos, wasn't wearing glasses, and didn't have any facial hair, all of which were inconsistent with Mr. Kolonoski, who has several prominent tattoos and had a mustache and beard when he was arrested 2 days after the incident. And so her recollection of this incident is being called into question. And when you add on top of that a prior inconsistent statement, in fact, she denied accessing Facebook during the incident on the stand, you know, that calls into question her credibility, whether it's just a simple misrecollection of the events or actual false statements. It can certainly bolster Mr. Kolonoski's identity defense and undercut her credibility.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are you not presuming, though, that if the Facebook page had been introduced, that it would show, if somebody had testified, you would have been able to establish that she actually did make that post at, I think, 2:49 a.m. was the...
Right.
We don't know that.
In terms of what the timestamp means?
Yeah, we don't. So why isn't it equally possible that whatever investigations counsel made revealed that it would not be a fruitful line of inquiry to pursue?
Well, I think that's inconsistent with what the record shows, that defense counsel wanted this evidence in, and...
Well, because it said on its face 2:49, mm-hmm. but if you start getting witnesses in who testify about it, it's entirely possible, is it not, that you would find that the witness who authenticated it as being a genuine Facebook page would also be someone who could say, but the 2:49 doesn't actually mean 2:49.
Well, and then that would go more to the weight, not the admissibility of it.
Well, what do we know? We don't know what that testimony would have been.
Well, that's where, I think the trial court recognized that anybody with sort of general knowledge of Facebook posting would recognize that the timestamp corresponds to when the information is posted, and that's what, just a simple
fact. You say anybody knows that?
Well, anybody with just general general Facebook knowledge, and that's the bar that the trial court set for the foundational witness.
Well, he said that would meet the bar, but he didn't say that that's what would be said. Mm-hmm. He didn't say that, all you have to do is get somebody who knows how Facebook works, and they'll come in and testify that 2:49 means 2:49.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that. Trial court didn't know that.
To counter that, there wasn't really much dispute among the prosecutor and defense counsel that 2:49 meant 2:49 a.m.
Well, had anybody talked to anybody? I mean, that's what I'm saying is that people know lots of things, but I don't see that as something where just anybody can come in and talk.
There's some people who are not on Facebook.
Absolutely. And, the trial court did say not just anybody, any person off the street, but somebody with general knowledge of and experience of posting on Facebook could testify to that, which is quite a low bar considering how commonly Facebook is used.
Okay. Do you have your rebuttal time?
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ian Eath. I represent the state of Washington, the respondent in this case. We are very simply asking Your Honors to affirm Mr. Kalinowski's conviction because he fails to show deficient performance and he certainly fails to show prejudice in this case. As for the Facebook posts, the simple fact of the matter is that we don't know what this Facebook post would have proven, if anything at all. We also do not know from this record what efforts the...
Well, we just heard that we would know that it was posted at 2:49. Does the record support that assertion?
No, ma'am. The record here indicates that the defense attorney asserted that somewhere on the page appeared the timestamp 2:49. The state objected and said that that doesn't mean that it proves that the Facebook post was made by the victim at 2:49, and the trial court agreed. The record shows that the trial court says, I can't tell from looking at this piece of evidence when it was posted. I don't know what the 2:49 means. Remember that what we are talking about is a posting of a photograph of a man in a football pose wearing a tutu. That's all we know from the record here.
And that it came from the victim's phone.
And it was on the Facebook page associated with the victim in this case, as viewed by the defense investigator a year after the crime occurred. The posting, what little else we know, is that the posting of this photograph to the victim's Facebook page was, the original post was by someone else.
So you're saying that it was the Facebook page, but it was not necessarily associated with her phone?
Possibly. We simply just do not know. Appellant here is jumping to the conclusion that this piece of evidence proves that the victim posted something to Facebook at 2:49 a.m. on the night that she was raped. We don't have the Facebook page. We don't have any testimony about where on the Facebook page this 2:49 appeared. We don't have any testimony that she posted this or that it's conclusive that she posted this. There's no possible.
Wasn't there some suggestion that she, what happened was that the person using her phone or using her Facebook page liked the post?
My understanding of the record is that it was that somebody either clicked a button indicating that they liked the post or that they clicked a button sharing the post.
I see, but we don't really even know which.
We don't know which. We don't know what that, if that was, that could have been an inadvertent bump of a button on a phone. We just, we're engaging in the speculation that perhaps this document might theoretically have proven the victim in this case to be somehow lying about what happened to her that night.
Well, the trial court addressed essentially the prejudice prong when he, I think it was a he, said that the issue here really is identity and that the authentication of the document might have gone to the credibility of the witness, but the issue was identity, and that under the circumstances here, there was no prejudice. What do you do with that?
Well, I think that's correct, because Mr. Kalinowski was mounting an alibi defense. He wasn't mounting a, I was there and she consented and it wasn't a rape. So whether or not she posted something at 2:49 a.m., on the night of the attack actually didn't do much to help the case. It certainly didn't help his defense that I wasn't there.
Well, but on the other hand, I mean, the thing is that she had a story. She had her version of what happened, and her version was that I was completely pinned down, but, you know, I couldn't access my phone. Whoever this person was, Dale or Derek, was, you know, totally dominating my movements for the entire night until he finally left, and at 8 o'clock I got up and left. Now, if it turns out that actually, whoever it was, you know, an hour after the alleged rape occurred, she's on Facebook playing around with Facebook and liking or sharing certain posts, that is a pretty contradictory assertion to I was so pinned down by the rapist that I couldn't even move.
I don't.
And you know, I mean, it would be an attack on her credibility.
I don't dispute that. Except for the fact that it all supposes that what this Facebook page actually proves
exactly.
That she posted something at 2:49 a.m. We just don't know.
Right.
It's impossible to know from where we're sitting here today. The other issue from
it's impossible to know based on the record.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, Mr. Kalinowski could bring a personal restraint petition where he brings in his attorney to discuss the lengths to which he went to authenticate this Facebook post, including, and most importantly, what he actually discovered about whether it was even authenticatable. We don't even know that much. He could have gone out and found somebody familiar with Facebook who looked at it and said, I can't tell from this whether she actually posted something at 2:49 a.m. This isn't conclusive.
Well, it seems from the record that there were, as counsel has related, there were conversations on the record with the judge and that the law enforcement officer was supposed to do something and the prosecutor was supposed to cooperate, and the inference that is kind of suggested here is that the prosecutor and the law enforcement officer were suffocating this possible defense by passively resisting it, apparently. Is that a correct inference to draw from the record, or are there other conversations that we should be aware of?
I wouldn't characterize it that way. My reading of the record is that the judge ordered the state to essentially do the defense attorney's job for him, which is to go out and gather exculpatory evidence. And in pursuit of that, the state attempted to contact Facebook. And my reading of the record was that Facebook was non-responsive. This is an ineffective assistance of defense counsel claim, however. And so that would work against the fact that the defense counsel was constitutionally deficient if he made every effort that he could as a defense attorney to secure this evidence but was stymied by the state. That's a different claim. And it works against an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. The bottom line is, in order to judge deficient performance by defense counsel in this case, you have to actually know what final conclusion he arrived at in his decision not to present somebody to authenticate this Facebook document. He could have very well concluded, just as the trial court did, that it was ambiguous at best, did nothing to really help his case and didn't really fit with his defense theory, which I should add was perfectly reasonable. The facts could be very different, but with this record, it's all sort of armchair speculation, and it certainly doesn't meet Mr. Kalinowski's burden here that he needs to show deficient performance and prejudice. I just wanted to mention briefly the DNA issue without elaborating. The state's position on that is that the defense or Mr. Kalinowski's burden is to prove deficient performance, which means proving that the defense attorney in this case, the defense theory that he mounted was completely unreasonable, and Mr. Kalinowski fails in that burden.
Well, I think you are going to have to elaborate. So the argument is that defense counsel was deficient in failing to object to the testimony because it didn't talk about the probability of match. So how does that fit with what you've just said about the deficient performance?
Well, Mr. Kalinowski needs to prove that the defense attorney was completely unreasonable in pursuing a defense that Mr. Kalinowski wasn't there when the rape occurred and that the injuries that he was found with when he was arrested were explained by the dangerous job that he was employed in. And part of that defense theory is that the blood found on his shirt didn't belong to anybody but himself. It's a completely reasonable defense. Now, Mr. Kalinowski thinks that it might have been better to mount a full frontal attack and try to suppress the evidence that there was blood on his shirt.
So the evidence supported his theory. Is that
the evidence supported his theory? That's the bottom line, and that was reasonable in these circumstances, and he can't prove otherwise. Thank you.
Returning to the impeachment issue, the trial court ruled that the Facebook post itself and the Facebook account was otherwise authenticated and was admissible since the complaining witness admitted that the account belonged to her and the defense investigator could testify that she took the screenshot, which makes this case fundamentally distinguishable from McFarland, which the state relies on in its response brief to argue that essentially that there's an inadequate record here. The other point I'd like to make is that in an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, we have the burden of establishing a reasonable probability that but for counsel's deficient performance, the outcome would have been different. This isn't, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt. This is a reasonable probability. And here we have, like the cases cited in my briefing, Horton and the Indiana cases, Ellison and Wright, you have a situation where defense counsel wants impeachment evidence in and fails to take the necessary procedural steps to ensure its admission. You also have case law that I discussed.
But in those cases, isn't it the fact that the evidence that the counsel blundered in failing to get in, it was known and on the record to be what he wanted to use it for was true.
Well, I think it's Ellison. I mixed up Ellison and Wright, but in one of those cases, there was a rape kit that needed to be authenticated, and defense counsel's failure to authenticate that piece of evidence was ineffective assistance of counsel. And I think that's quite analogous to the situation where we have here, where we have this Facebook post at 2:49. The record demonstrates.
Was it known what the rape kit showed?
It suggested that the woman in that case had not actually had intercourse on the evening of the alleged rape, mm-hmm. Which is similar to this in this circumstance where we have evidence going to the credibility of the complaining witness, which in a rape case where you don't have eyewitnesses is incredibly important, as Your Honor pointed out in the state's argument, that, you know, even if we have an identity defense, it's still her credibility is incredibly relevant in this case, going to her memory of the events and her version of the events. And finally, just briefly on the DNA evidence, the complaining witness was excluded as a possible contributor, and so the state's argument that it would have been able to argue or infer that it was her blood is simply incorrect based on the evidence. So under both the record we have and the rules of evidence, the state wouldn't be allowed to make that argument. Ask this court to reverse and remand for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The next